the soldiers.
And you'll tell us something other than USO too. What,
okay. I do not. I can't put the settlement to exact kinds of things that were going on, because at that particular point in time, my prime occupation and involvement was with the Y. So I'm not exactly sure what happened at the settlement at that point. I mean, I do know that's when Sidney Lindenberg came and that kind of thing.
Did we have the Y in Squirrel Hill at the time?
Not the Y.
No, the Ikes.
The Ikes came to Squirrel Hill in 1942.
That's when they were on Forward Avenue and Murray Avenue?
They were just on Forward at that time.
I see. Now,
do you want to hear a story of how I know exactly it was 42?
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a boyfriend who was in the Navy. And he wanted to write me mushy letters, and he wrote me mushy letters, and he wanted me to write him mushy letters.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't love him, so I didn't do that. And I wrote him a letter one time and said, "It's so exciting, the Irene Kaufman settlement moved to Forward Avenue."
Mm-hmm.
And by return mail, I got a letter from him which said, "I really don't give a what the Irene Kaufman settlement is doing." I'll never forget that.
Isn't that things we remember, huh, Anita? Timelines, our chronological timeline.
So what happened, though, as the boys came back from the Army, at that particular point in time, I was working the switchboard and going to CMU. I was going to Carnegie Tech. And I worked the switchboard 3 nights a week and 1 day on the weekend. As the boys came back from the service, the Y gave them each a membership. And they all stopped in, and the Y, I know, maintained very close records of where the Army boys were, and became involved in bond sales and blood drives.
Milt Sussman was writing a column at that time, letters.
Sussman was writing a column and editing the Y Weekly. And Milt did that for many, many years.
When was the Y Weekly started? Mm-hmm.
The Y Weekly probably started... The Y Weekly started when the Y was built. We have copies of the Y Weekly from 1926. That's how I got all the people...
Where are these copies?
At the building. That's how I got all the people to be involved with establishing the Passamaquoddy Endowment Fund. I read them all. It was the most fascinating thing.
I remember reading Sussman's articles from England and such, and letters
he wrote
from
them all during the war. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, he was overseas.
Yeah, he was in England, I think.
Yeah, I think that's where he was.
No.
But that is letters, that column had nothing to do with the Y, am I right? Mm-hmm.
It was letters home.
And it was written in the Y Weekly?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Well, when the Y Weekly, did that merge with the Jewish Criterion?
No. The Criterion and the Outlook became the Chronicle. The Y Weekly was always the house organ of the Y. I don't know of, but there probably was some kind of house organ at the settlement.
Okay, well, is the Y Weekly still published?
Mm-hmm.
Is the Y Weekly?
The Y Weekly is not published as the Y Weekly anymore.
When did it start?
That was a metamorphosis that came. They stopped publishing it weekly. I guess during Arthur Rotman's term as executive director. Then it became every other week. And they changed its name at some point to Inside the Center. And then they stopped using that format altogether during Mark Rubin's time and put it into some other format. it became the organ to save money. Now it is out of business altogether, and Bob Schachter is using inserts in the Chronicle, if you noticed you got one yesterday when it came.
Okay, well now it seems to me, let's talk a little bit about Rotman, because it seems to me, was he the efficiency expert? He knew he could project closing the east side, east end and the organ. What was his contribution?
He was a real administrator who I have the highest respect for. And I don't think I've ever worked with anybody before or since who was as professional and as creative as he was. And his strength was administration. And he taught me, I know, some of the best lessons I ever learned. And, well, a couple. First of all, that being in communal work had to be an honest and open partnership with the lay community. If it weren't, it would never work. The second thing that he taught me was you have to take strength to allow strength to grow around. And the third thing that he was a great leader in was establishing the Jewish Community Center's, the Jewish Community's association with Israel. He was one of the leaders in that.
Okay. Now, did he start the Jewish identity in Spring Shalom, Pittsburgh, or was he doing that?
Yes, that was him. That was him.
Now, the other thing about Rotman, he said creative and administrative. It seems to me, did he introduce new ideas, or did he involve more people?
He involved the lay community. He built carefully built the center to involve all facets of the community. Okay. He was very conscious of involving the rich and the poor and the Orthodox and conservative and Reformed, and worked very hard on the concept that the center was the only place where everyone could meet on a common ground.
And he worked on that by establishing the board, involving the board? Okay. What did you mean by they had to be honest about with the people? Was it dishonest before? Or?
I'm never going to say dishonest.
No.
But I think one of the things that we find is being a communal servant isn't all, and I use that word I use the word communal servant not in a subservient fashion, but one who is working for the community. It's very easy to tell half a story because you're risking and exposing yourself at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you don't want the whole community to come down on your head. Mm-hmm. But I know that was the secret he taught me that allowed me to work as I did for so many years, because I was always honest with Vicki and Lou Goldzer when they were in my home, but I was also honest with you when you were in the center. That you had to know that I was credible. And that was the lesson that Arthur taught those of us who listened to him and the community.
By making these changes, he must have ruffled some hair.
Very many.
He must have had some people who were strongly supportive of him. Who
Very
were
many.
These people?
John Wolfe was his staunchest supporter. John Wolfe and Jerry Ostro and Julian Russlander. Harold Gondelman.
Wolfe and Russlander, I missed one in between.
Jerry Ostro.
So it was pretty UJF-ish. Federation support.
Yes.
Federation support, and also high socioeconomic and Reform. What happened? How was he able to bring in the Orthodox? And
well, these are the people that supported him as he started.
Yes.
And allowed him.
They did allow him to involve the others.
Oh, absolutely. absolutely encouraged him.
Interesting.
And he involved them in everything he did. He touched base with those guys so that they always knew where he was going. He was excellent. That's probably why I ran into so much difficulty after that.
Oh, that's very hard when you're spoiled by professionalism. You're telling me he was
right.
A professional.
He was a real professional.
How about taking strength to allow strength? That had to be tough.
Well, I can only tell you my own experiences, how I got where I got.
All right.
You want to know my chronological move.
I want to know what your involvements were.
Yeah,
okay. And how
in
1950,
we moved to Stanton Heights.
We is?
Milton and Anita and Jody.
From FD?
No, from... we lived in the General Forbes apartment.
Oh.
Right near the Squirrel Hill. That's why I could run up the street and work for a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
Leon Rubenstein, who I had worked with, was the branch director of East End at that time. And he called me one day and he said, now I had led a group and I taught a class and I taught little kids,
mm-hmm.
but he called me one day and he said, we want to have a nursery school in East End and you're the person to do it. So I took Jody, age year and a half, and we started working on the nursery school. That was the start of my really going back to work. And the longest period of time that I stayed home after that was when Billy was born in 1953. I think I stayed home for about 15 months.
Well, what was your parents' reaction to this? Your communities to going to work? Was it Milton's?
Milton's parents were much more horrified than Anita's parents. You know, through my whole career, I suspect I got to know a lot of people, and I think like at least half the city knew what I did. My mother-in-law and father-in-law never told anybody I worked. I probably was one of the original women's libbers, but didn't know it.
To Shanda.
That's right. They were embarrassed for Milton that I was working, that they felt that I was, I didn't think he was giving me enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, how hard was it? You said your sister helped out by babysitting.
Well, that was only at the very beginning.
And then what happened?
That was when Jody was first born, and I would run upstairs I'd run up the street for 2 hours. Ever after that, I took Jody to nursery school with me, and then I took Billy to nursery school with me.
How hard was that being?
It was very difficult. And I did have babysitters that were available when they began to not be happy. And the only child that I ever expelled from nursery school was my Billy, who got to a point where he was jealous of all the children, and he wanted to sit on my lap all the time. So I had to expel poor Billy, and that was probably the most difficult thing of my career. And he went to Hebrew Institute.
How do you feel about that now, looking back?
I did the right thing. Yeah. But it was not easy. See, all the years of my children growing up, I grew in my career as my children grew. And we only lived 5 minutes from the East End Center. So all the years I ran the nursery school, I wouldn't accept any other responsibility so that I could send them to school and I would go to work in the morning and then I would come home at lunchtime and I would send them back to school in the afternoon and I'd go back to nursery school and then I would run home and get there before they got there after school. And I ran around a lot in those days, and I was teased unmercifully by many other members of the professional staff, because even if I would go to a staff meeting in Oakland or anything else, I would run home for lunch.
Mm-hmm. And
only when they stayed in school all day did I begin to take more responsibility. I went back to work full time. Everything I'd been doing until 1957, was part-time. In 1957, I took what they called a full-time position, but it was 30 hours at that time.
Right. And if you had it to do over, would you do it the same way? Do you think you did all right?
I think I did just fine.
What was your first full-time position?
My first full-time position was as director of the East End Nursery School, and I had a little responsibility of teaching English to the senior adults, which was a wonderful experience.
That was the English as a second language, the foreign.
It was people who had been in this country, though, for many years, and who never took the time to make it their first language.
How long did that go on?
I did that until the nursery school became a full-time proposition.
Well, let's talk about the nursery school. I mean, not many people were sending kids, young kids, to nursery school at that time, were they?
That was the point at which the value of early childhood education became recognized. See, did I tell you, and if I'm repeating myself, just stop me. I got into the nursery school business. I got to working with young children through my music. I had become very involved, and I loved Eurythmics. And through working with Eurythmics, I began to work with young children. And it was through that that I got so interested in the nursery school. And first I developed the East End Nursery School, and then I became what they called the citywide director of nursery schools. The word early childhood education wasn't used yet at that time. And I became, as my children called me, the citywide mother. And my office moved to Squirrel Hill then. And this all has to come back to Arthur, how I got out of the nursery school. When he first came to Pittsburgh, he hadn't been here 1 month. Do you remember the old center of the nursery school office was at the end of a long hall?
Mm-hmm.
And he stood out in the main hall and he yelled back to me, "Would you please tell me what you're still doing in the nursery school?" And I got on the defensive. I said, "What do you mean? What am I still doing in the nursery school?" And I said, "I'm here because I love it and I've enjoyed it and I've had more responsibility," and I was going on and on and on, and he stopped me in mid-sentence and said, "Well, not for long," and he walked away. And I thought I lost my job. That was it was terrible. And the following day he called me into his office, and that is when I became the director of children's program and the director of the James and Rachel Levinson Day Camp, and continued to supervise the nursery schools. Then when it came time to close the East End building, since I was a member of that community and my relationship with the community was such a good one, he put me into East End as the senior staff person, and I closed that building. And it was the most interesting thing. We obviously did something right at that time, because how we did it, the community did not revolt. They were unhappy, but they never took it out on the agency. Those people who were involved stayed involved.
You must have realized that that was the logical thing to do.
Now, it seems that in a time when many women weren't working, many of them stayed home, that it was very important to you that you work and go up on the career ladder. Now, tell me where you got that kind of chutzpah,
I guess it was how I was brought up. I was encouraged from the time I was a child to ask questions. I was encouraged to discuss or argue, if you will, my point of view. My parents took us and exposed us to theater and music and buildings falling down and whatever was going to be history and whatever was going to give us a new experience for our lives.
Now, do you feel you did this for your children, or how was it different raising your children than you being raised?
The only difference, I guess, in my raising my children was that I was much more permissive with my children. And I think Milton and I gave our children many more material things than we had. And I think we began to do that very consciously when we felt that our parents had had the attitude that we worked hard, now it's your turn to work hard. So we thought maybe we would countermand that we would share everything we had with our children. As I look back on this, I'm not so sure it was absolutely right. You know, we went through periods of time when Milt was very angry when our kids had, and he'd get and say, they have everything in this world, they have so much. And then I would say to him, but who gave it to it? Who gave it to them? We gave it to them. Why are we mad at them? Because they have it. I'm sure many people in our generation have that feeling.
Well, besides that, in family, can you contrast what was happening in the community in Pittsburgh when you were little as compared to when we were raising our kids? Was there a difference there that led you to do these things or made it harder or easier to raise children?
I think it was much harder to raise children in our days, Vicki. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't forget, television brought the world into our living rooms. Scientific growth occurred in our children's lifetime than occurred in the whole rest of the history of the world. I mean, all of a sudden the world got to be this big.
Okay.
You know, we were one of those horrible people that were not going to buy one of those boxes to put in our living room. And so we didn't until... I mean, we used to go to people's homes and nobody talked to you, and the television was terrible. And we made up our minds we were not going to have one until Jody walked up and down the street and said to all the neighbors, could I watch Howdy Doody at your house? My mother and daddy won't buy a television set.
That did it.
Mm-hmm. You come to this. How did you happen to meet Milt?
I think I told you that last time. I met him at Millie Rosenberg's house on Phillips Avenue, July 4th, 1942.
Okay, we got that. Where was his family from?
Milt's family. They lived in Oakland. They were from Russia. They both came here when they were quite young. And,
did they have community involvement?
No. Milt's mother was involved, but on a very low-key basis. She could never think community. She was she was busy in her shul, which was Tree of Life, and the Mizrahi. Milt's father never had any involvement at all.
What did he do?
He was the owner of the Tri-State Leather Company, which Milt and Billy own now.
Okay. Can you tell us anything about that leather company or how it started?
When my father-in-law first came to this country, he worked for leather houses when he first came to Pittsburgh. And he worked for Leo Ferber.
Is Lopatin anything to do with leather?
No. Lopatin, you can get an interpretation of Lopatin in two ways. It means shovel in Russian. No, it must be Yiddish. It means shovel in Yiddish, and it was the name of a river in Russia, Lopatin.
he was a leather maker that came to the United States.
Actually, not a leather maker. A leather salesman is what he was. Leo Ferber was his boss. And it wasn't until 1940 that he opened his own Tri-State Leather Company. And Milt worked for him. He would leave school every day and work at the store.
Where was the store?
At the corner of Tunnel and Wiley, which is no longer in existence. It's where the Bigelow is. It is now on Fifth Avenue, 1321.
It's still in existence.
They're actually leather jobbers, is what it is. They sell shoe find, leather and shoe findings.
Which is what?
That's all the supplies for the shoemaker and the shoe store, the heels and the soles and the buckles and polishes and shoelaces and that kind of stuff.
Now I want to go into how, if you built any of the religious or community involvement into your children.
Some days I think yes, and some days I think no. It's very interesting to me. In 1965, I went to Israel. I was sent by the Jewish Community Center. It was the first Jewish Welfare Board seminar that they had there. That trip was handed to me on a silver platter. And I came home saying the whole thing was a joke because I had never been separated from Milt for more than 2 days, and here was I trotting off to Israel for 7 weeks. And I tell Milt this story, that I was offered this trip, and he said to me, "So when are you leaving?" And I said, "I'm not going." He said to me, "What do you mean you're not going? You've been dying to go to Israel." Well, the end run was, he said to me, "Take Billy, take Jody, sign them up for anything you want. You are going on that trip. If you can't go yourself," he said, "I can't go away for 7 weeks." And so I went. And we had signed both Billy and Jody up for Kfar Silver. But about a month before that we were supposed to go, Billy got cold feet. He kept asking me questions about the Arabs running down the middle of the street. So one night I talked it over with Milton. I said, "I think Billy is really terrified of going, and maybe I'm doing the wrong thing by taking him." So we went and we asked Billy, would he rather go back to Wood Echo? And I would just take Jody to Israel. And he was so relieved. And he went to Wood Echo. Now, I took Jody with me that summer, and consequently, Jody went back to Israel many, many times. She met her husband there. Now, with both of our children, and it's very interesting, both of our children are married to non-Jews who converted. Whether that's is how it showed what we had planted in them, we don't know. Do you know if you did right or wrong? I don't know. Our children went to Sunday school and to Hebrew school, and we celebrated the holidays, and celebrating holidays with family was always very important. And my father's involvement at the Beth Shalom was always a tremendous sense of pride to my children. They used to like to go and look at him sit on the bin.
I want to talk about this a little bit because it seems like you really were involved. It wasn't something that you didn't have in the home. There was tradition. There was religion.
Sure.
And we're finding this became a pattern. There are very prominent, very Jewish families here where this has happened. What do you think it is? Do you think it was a revolt, this non-Jewish, you know, it's just this thing, times?
That they've married non-Jews? I don't know. With Billy, it was probably a revolt. Billy was part of the end of the 60s and the early 70s. A I'm sure he was doing everything he could to aggravate the hell out of us. Oh, that was an awful period.
Join the club. Three of them.
There isn't any one of us. See, Jody just missed the beginning of the revolt. And she chose, and I remember the point at which she chose what she wanted to do. She came home from, Jody was a very beautiful young lady. And she would go to parties, and she always had, you know, lots of friends. And she came home from a party one day, and this was after her first trip to Israel, by the way. And that trip to Israel was a mind opener for her. And she came home, and she literally sat in her bedroom for a couple of months after she came home, because nobody wanted to listen. Her friends didn't want to listen to what she had learned. And she was angry at her.